This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
You're darn tootin', it's One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you here on a Tuesday as we sit 6 days away from week two for the Buffalo Bills. We are about 5 days away from the rest of the NFL playing, 2 days away from Chargers Chiefs. Is that a delectable Thursday night game or what?
I saw Chargers Chiefs on the menu, and I knew it wasn't the Monday night game. I was going, wow, how can they not put that on, you know, on prime? How can they not put that on Sunday night, Monday night? And then I was like, oh, it's on Thursday night. I get it. So there you go. I am going to watch that game.
Yeah. Keenan Allen does not look like he's going to play in that one, which is unfortunate. Had a hamstring injury in week one. So that kind of takes a little luster off for me.
We do not care.
Speak for yourself.
We do not care. We do not care. Just play the game and see who wins. I'll tell you what, though. I said it yesterday, and I'll say it again. You watch these games, and that guy in L.A., the Chargers, Justin Herbert, is the only guy, to me, that is in the ballpark with Josh.
Yeah, closest thing. I said last year, he's the closest thing to Josh Allen.
He can't run. He doesn't run like Josh. They play the game a little differently.
He's as athletic as Josh.
Yeah, but he don't run. He's not.
Well, he chooses not to, I think, more than anything.
He's not the runner Josh is.
He's not the freight train when he's moving that Josh is.
He does not. Yes. He runs like a quarterback, and Josh runs like, you know, a buffalo. So that's the difference. Right. So, but I'm telling you, when they stand back there and sling it, they're the same guy.
He's got an arm.
Yeah, that's why people around the, you know, even though they didn't make the playoffs last year, that's why people are like all about the Chargers, just because of him.
Yes.
Just like the Bills, just like the Bills and Josh Allen. I mean, Justin Herbert is a guy who can really go.
And he had one throw where he's rolling to his left and he flips his hips because he's a right-handed thrower.
Mm-hmm.
And he got it to – it's this play right here.
Yeah.
Flips his hips and gets it there, and then somehow the receiver spins into the end zone for a touchdown on maybe the worst tackle I saw all week.
He sidearms that thing in there, switching his hips around 180 degrees. And sidearms that thing in there, and it's on the money.
I mean, that reminds me of the touchdown pass that Josh had to Stephon Diggs Monday night 2020 against the Patriots. Remember that one where Riddick and everybody in the Monday night booth are going, whoa.
Yeah, they're going, oh, did you see? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'll say this.
It wasn't as pretty as that, but it was the same kind of mechanics necessary to pull it off.
Right. Yeah, that's an amazing throw, and it's why, you know, the league's all gaga over these guys. And it's funny too. You think about this. You see Josh throw it. Yeah, this is the one. Oh, look at our guys pulling this highlight up for us to watch while we're doing it.
Flip the hips, same thing. Throw
the
ball.
Hips, boom, touchdown.
I mean, that's a harder throw than the one that Justin Herbert made, but it illustrates the point. Herbert's got some of the same physical skills to his passing game that Josh has.
So Justin Herbert comes out in the same draft as Tua. And you want to know why NFL people, why football people go absolutely bonko. And it happens more than we'll ever know because I think, and I don't know this, I think coaches are forced when they sign their contract. The standard head coaching contract in the NFL has non-disclosures. You can't talk about what the owner says. I think. I don't know if they do that or not, but it sounds like it. Because I'll tell you this.
I don't know.
When you get these guys, and I've talked to coaches around the league, and they'll tell you, well, it was going to that, that, and they'll say, well, ownership said this, and we couldn't really do this because the owner. And I got that a ton when I was with CBS. And the guys in Miami, all the football guys, that's from Brian Flores and all those guys were like, yeah, I know we had this tank for Tua thing going, but this Justin Herbert guy, he's the guy. We got to get him. And the ownership said, no, we're tanking for Tua. Get Tua. And they go, no, this Justin Herbert guy is the guy. And it was like, no, we got to take Tua. And they're like, are you sure? He goes, yeah, we tank for Tua. We'll do it. Take him. He went to Alabama. He won a national championship. Let's get this guy. This Justin Herbert guy's there. And the football guys are going, no, this Justin Herbert guy can play. And the ownership says, listen, take him.
And that's final.
So now,
all right, he owns the team,
right? He owns the team. That's how that stuff happens once in a while, And well, Justin
Herbert.
I
witnessed it once in the Bills draft room.
So Justin Herbert ends up in L.A., Tua ends up in Miami, and they are what they are. And the football guys are like this, going like their palms are up.
What are we doing?
What are we doing? And they are now in Miami. They Mike McDaniel is down there, and his coaching staff and the front office and the players, they're all jumping through fiery hoops with no safety net, trying to make things perfect for Tua.
Yeah.
And L.A. is out there. They've got a riding crop riding on Justin Herbert's shoulders, hitting him with it. Let's go. And the guy's carrying him, right? That's the difference. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I'll say this, too. Go around the league. This is how we've been. It's like full circle. You go look at Ryan Tannehill. Nobody likes Ryan Tannehill. We're all down on Ryan Tannehill. That guy, you know what that guy can do? He can sling it.
I take him over to a.
I watched him. Yeah.
I let
watched
him walk him out the
game,
door.
I watched him this last week where the Giants beat him, nipped him at the end. Tannehill's got an arm. He can still sling that thing. So you look around the league, you gotta be able to deliver it, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Mac Jones.
No.
Tua.
No.
You know, even Garoppolo struggled with it.
Yeah.
They got, you know, all these guys, they just, I mean, the ball comes out and it's like, it just doesn't go anywhere. You know, Josh throws it, Herbert throws it. It's like a cannon going off. The thing, you can hear it whistle out of their hand. And then these other guys come out there and it's like, and yeah. It's, you know, the first pass that Tua threw during that game on Sunday. You said, "Hey, watch his first pass."
Yeah,
here.
I said,
"Oh,
watch his first
started.
Pass." When
I'm
you
just
get
getting
a
started because you know because the Patriots had the ball first, so they wait and they punt it away. Tua gets the ball and he throws his first pass and steps into it, lets it go, and it's from the left hash. I think it's somewhere around. He might be between the hashes, and the receiver is like 15 yards down the field to his right, outside the numbers.
Yeah.
He throws the ball about 8 yards past the line of scrimmage, and it bounces twice before it gets even to to where the receiver's in the picture.
It looked like he was trying to skip a rock on a lake.
Yeah.
That's what it looked like. And I'm over at my workstation doing my stuff after I told Steve to watch the first pass. And I'm sitting there, you know, just typing, doing whatever. And I'm saying to myself, I wonder if I'm going to know when Steve watches the first pass in the video. Because I told him to look for it. The game starts and he's doing whatever. And all of a sudden I hear, oh, my gosh.
I couldn't believe it.
I look over at Steve. I go, did you see the first pass? He goes, that's unbelievable.
I had to run. I ran it back. I was like, look, I was looking at it again and again.
Did
and
it
I was
bounce
like,
twice?
Seriously.
Did it really bounce twice? Yeah.
Like right out of the gate. First pack, you know, you think, fresh season, here we go. All right, Tua, yeah. Let's go.
Meanwhile, you've got Dolphins fans so giddy after the win over the Patriots that they're asking for Buffalo already.
Oh, yeah.
Bring on Buffalo. We want Buffalo. That's what all these Dolphins fans are saying. They're not even worried about week two. It's like, hey, guys, you may want to worry about the Ravens first. You got that crew coming in next week. So have fun with that. Then come talk to the Bills.
It was unbelievable.
Can you believe that? They win one game, 20-7.
I kind of believe it.
Ugh.
I kind of believe it. Everybody was all happy. I get it. But, man, oh, man. They
bring on the Bills. Are you kidding me, Dolphins fans? I'm sorry, Doll fans. That's what they call themselves, right? Doll fans.
I'm telling you, man, it was – I could not believe it when I saw that. You called it, and sure enough, there it was. But, man, oh, man.
That's why I told Bills Mafia, hang on to the receipts.
Yeah,
hang on to the receipts.
Right? It was – yeah. I tweeted that tweet back to the – not didn't tweet it. I sent it.
You texted
it to the group, to our little core advisory
group
here.
Yeah.
And we'll revisit that.
We'll hold on to that one.
Amazing.
Speaking of hanging on to receipts, Robert Saleh, the head coach of the New York Jets, as we go around the NFL here, which is presented by Kalida Health, the official healthcare system of the Buffalo Bills, Robert Saleh at his press conference after the Jets game on Monday basically said, he was asked, you know, how do you feel about the naysayers? There was a lot of expectations coming into this season. You lay an egg against the Ravens. All the boo birds and naysayers are out again. What do you say to them? And he said, oh, I'm keeping track of them. I'm keeping track of them. I'm holding on to the receipts. So it's got to be tough. You know, you're still trying to turn the corner and be a winning team. And they've got some ground to still cover here, clearly. You know, when they lost 20, they lost in resounding fashion on Sunday to the Ravens, 24-7. So we'll see where it goes. I like Saleh as a head coach. I'll say it again. I think their GM Joe Douglas is making some good moves in terms of improving that roster, making it deeper and more talented. But they're not there yet. So
well, they didn't
we'll see how the season goes for them.
I'll say this. I didn't expect them to be, you know, world beaters this season. But
no.
And they may.
They might win six or seven games.
They're going to be, I think, they're going to be markedly improved
from
the year
They'll be a tougher
ago.
Out. I think that's
Absolutely.
Safe to say, right?
Absolutely. And I think even you catch the Ravens, and we know this too. The Ravens are a well-coached bunch. They're a veteran bunch. Lamar is now entrenched. It's his team. They've got guys who really – they've got a culture built there. You know what you're going to get with them. They're always going to compete for that division title in the AFC North. They're just a solid, well-run, up-and-at-em organization. John Harbaugh is the second longest or maybe
– Yeah, 15. This is 15th
yeah,
season.
Yeah, he's been there a long time. And you know, so they – yeah. So you knew the Jets were up against it, particularly on opening day when they're going to be healthy, the Ravens.
And then Lamar's throwing lasers. From his hip.
So they kind of
50 yards.
I think the one thing that disappoints you probably for the Jets is the fact that their offense couldn't get on track at all. The Ravens got a new defensive coordinator.
Have Zach Wilson maybe for the first four games now,
right.
I'm saying.
And Joe Flacco is
he's a nice veteran quarterback.
He's immobile.
He's not able to carry a team.
Yeah, he can't do it himself. So that I get it. But yeah, I'm not writing the Jets off completely after a tough loss on opening day.
No, I think they'll be a tougher out this year. It's just going to take some time. You might see a difference in their play collectively by the time you get to midseason, maybe second half of the year. Yeah, have fun catching Lamar. Jeez, yay. It's ridiculous.
He's ridiculous. We're watching. We're
gonna
watching
see him
film.
In a couple of weeks.
We're watching film, a game film highlights of Lamar now as we're sitting here in the studio, and it's you know you forget how good he is.
Oh my gosh!
And you know,
I'm convinced that guy could dance his way out of quicksand. He's quick. On
his
feet.
Look so good. And let's not forget they were. He's an MVP, and they were a good football team a year ago that was ravaged by injuries. Yeah. They were playing with cornerbacks. They got right off the street, and you're not going to win
right
like that.
Speaking of quarterbacks, Josh Allen was an award winner this week. I'll just say this. I think we all knew he was going to be a very strong candidate for our good friend Kyle Brandt's Angry Runs segment on Good Morning Football.
Mm-hmm.
We have the award being handed out and Kyle Brandt's commentary on Josh's angry run against the Rams on Thursday night.
Do you hear the rumbling of the Tatanka? You can feel, you gotta put your ear all the way to the ground and you can feel the Tatanka coming. We're going back to Bills Rams. Number 17 for the Buffalo Bills. Let's go. This is a quarterback. Let's go. He's out of the pocket. Get down. Get down. Don't do it. Look out. That's Josh Allen onto the Rams sideline and into your living room. He switches the ball and then throws him to Santa Monica. Absolutely, his finger is in his ear hole. It is intrusive. That is a violation. And we don't care. We absolutely love it. And here's my favorite part. Always the hidden gems and angry runs. Watch this. Freeze it. This psychopath is laughing. Get on that face. He is laughing. That is a big old toothy grin. This guy feels like he just saw a car accident. And this guy says, yeah, I did it. What are you going to do about it? Devin Singletary was right here. Devin Singletary's lost. He said after the game, Oh, yeah. Josh was laughing when he did that. That is the kind of absolute axe murderer stuff we like in this segment. Josh Allen throwing someone into the sideline and then laughing about it. Does he get a scepter? Josh Allen's gotten him before. Josh Allen's a big old cantaloupe farmer. We know that. Does he get the scepter now? The scepter's going to Buffalo, Western New York. We're sending it to you. Look at that. Because he's got a great arm, and his head is all the way up it. Josh Allen wins the very first scepter. We do it. We'll send it to you. We will see you later. Send us a pic. Josh Allen, winner, week number one. Angry runs. Boom. See you next week.
Let's go.
All right, week one, and he was a unanimous winner, the entire panel. Peter Schrager, McCourty, Jamie Erdahl, they all went with Josh as the Angry Run winner of week one. And it's hard. That's a hard one to top. I mean, that's right up there with the Derrick Henry stiff arm on Josh Norman.
It's not
throwing
quite,
somebody out of bounds like not, that.
I'm saying this, though. I mean, one of the all-time – there's a couple of them that stand out. The one for the Bills is Dawson Knox back against Cincinnati's rookie season where
he got two people.
And then, you know – bug on the windshield, another guy, and then it's right up there. And I think the all-time, and well, we've all seen it. The all-time great angry run was the Marshawn Lynch run in Seattle in the playoff.
That was the
tone setter.
That was the earth shaker.
That was the one where the seismograph,
the earthquake, the earthquake run.
Yeah, the earthquake run. One of the all-time greats. That's really where the whole trend started.
So,
right?
But here is the important question, Steve. Okay, because I think Josh will accommodate Kyle Brandt with a picture. How does he level up from his first photo? Because if you remember,
he had
the scepter with a couple of cantaloupes right there on the table. I do know that they have invested in almond trees. They are now farming almonds on the Allen Farmstead, homestead. What do we call that? I'm not a
farmstead.
Yeah, farmstead. Does that work?
Yeah, no? Yeah. Some...
Anyway, so I don't know. Maybe he turns to almonds, one of their other crops that they have over there.
Josh is also a regular on his podcast. On his
well, that's why you know he's sending the photo. So
right.
I'm very interested to see what the photo choice will be, because he's got that's going to be a tough one to top. The cantaloupe photo was a keeper, man.
Right.
Now you got to. I got to top that one. That's not going to be easy. I'm sure he'll come up with something.
Yeah.
Because he has a fantastic sense of humor. Just a little bit of Bills Titans news. We already knew last week, before the season even started, that the Titans lost their top pass rusher, Harold Landry, which is a pretty large loss for them. Lost him for the season to an ACL. And then we just found out that Titans defensive end Deshaun Hand is going to undergo season-ending surgery for a torn quadriceps tendon suffered in Sunday's opener against the Giants. Now, he's not a starter, but he's a rotational player on their defensive line. So they're now down two players on their defensive front, Harold Landry and Deshaun Hand. Yes, they still have Jeffrey Simmons. They still have Bud Dupree, two top-end players. So it's not like the cupboard is bare, but their ranks have been thinned a little bit, and those might be easier losses to take when you're already like 8 or 9 games into the season and everybody knows their roles, and then somebody just steps up to fill the void early in the season. A guy like Harold Landry replacing him, that's a tough row to hoe, man, finding somebody that caliber to perform and produce that way.
As we've all seen, after training camp breaks, the cupboards are pretty bare. I mean, the Bills fans are all going, we might lose Isaiah Hodge. You know what? Nobody wants him. You know? They've all got their own guys they like. It's hard to get into the NFL. We forget, you know, we're thinking we got to keep all these guys. They're all really important. And, you know, the simple fact of the matter is there's just not enough really good guys who can play. And you end up, when these injuries happen, like Deshaun Hand, I mean, they're like going, oh, these teams are like, what? Oh, my gosh. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's a void. It's like losing Harrison Phillips. It's like losing Ed Oliver, you know, one of these guys. So.
And that's a bad injury.
Oh, yeah.
For especially big men. Because I remember the Bills had a defensive lineman here, Alex Carrington, who suffered a torn quadriceps tendon in like his third or fourth season. He was never the same. And his career ended a short time later because of it. That is a tough one, especially for big men to come back from, because the muscle structure down there by the quad is so large. It's so dependent on that tendon. It's just asking a lot to play at this level with this intensity, with people leaning on you and you pushing, and that all just the strain makes it difficult for that thing to hold up again, even after it's been repaired. So good luck to Deshaun Hand in recovering from what is a difficult injury to come back from. We got this far, about 20 minutes into the show, without even talking about the debacle that was the end of Monday Night Football.
Oh, my gosh.
Jiminy Christmas. So if you haven't seen it or you've been living under a rock, Russell Wilson and the Broncos are driving late. They're down a point to the Seahawks, who got a surprisingly good performance from Geno Smith in the first half. The second half, he just disappeared. Guy threw for 30 yards in the second half. Russell Wilson gets the team into Seahawks territory. There's about a minute left. The Broncos have all three timeouts, and they inexplicably let the clock run down as they get to fourth and five. And they run the clock down to about 20-something seconds. Then they call timeout because they decide at that point in time they are going to attempt not a 58, not a 60, not a 62, but a 64-yard field goal to try to win the game on a 64-yard field goal. I don't do analytics regularly, Steve, but you cannot tell me the win probability on a 64-yard field goal was better than the probability of converting a fourth and five with a quarterback you just spent $250 million to sign.
And gave up two number ones and a two.
Yeah.
And three players to get.
You went with the kicker.
You know what? Let's pull him off the field.
You went with the kicker.
Yeah, I get it. I know. Now, here's the thing. I'll say this. The guy had the leg to get it there, and they gave him a practice kick to do it. They iced him. And he went ahead and kicked it, and he missed it. He missed it left. I said, okay. So he missed it left. So he's going to try it again. This time he misses it left again just by a narrower margin. It looked like he had the leg to do it. He's going to make it look easy. But he missed it.
Are you telling me that Nathaniel Hackett, who still at just 42 years old, has been in this league a long time, has seen offenses left, right, center, backwards, forwards, up and down? He can't come up. You got three timeouts. Right. You've got every play in your playbook for fourth and five. You don't have to run anything to the sideline. You can run the ball. You don't have a play, a trick play for a fourth and five. You can't run what the Bills ran on third and one on Thursday night. You got nothing that a 64-yard field goal attempt is the better option. Get the hell out of here. That was terrible.
The percentages all say to go for it. The analytics, all that stuff. And you got the Manning cast was priceless. Those guys were
oh, my God.
They
I
were
thought
losing
Peyton Manning
their
was going to
have
an aneurysm.
They were losing their minds over not calling the timeout and talking it over and all that. Now, the hilarious thing about it, too, is think about this. The kick goes wide left, so the Seahawks come out to kneel down. Game's over. It's like 16 seconds left. They kneel down with 16 seconds left, and then Nate Hackett starts using his timeouts to stop.
It's over.
I
game's
go, what are
over,
you doing?
Pal.
That to me is that.
This is
that is to me unbelievably poignant about how unprepared they were for the moment.
This is why teams with first-year head coaches miss the playoffs. This is why. Because they're not used to being in these kinds of decision-making positions with the game on the line. And they don't always get it right. This one seemed pretty apparent, pretty easy to figure. I mean, he choked on the whole dang thing. Yeah. And couldn't even cough it up.
And it's easy to say, too, because the kick was wide. He had the leg. The guy could get it. And Russ Wilson said in the postgame, the guy, we asked the kicker what he needed. He goes, the 46-yard line, left hash. That's where they gave it to him. And he had the leg to do it. And he got the practice kick. And I get all that.
That's great that
but
he's confident, Steve.
Here's the thing. The way they used the clock at the end, waiting to take the timeout, they had decided not to go for it before they lined up
to let the clock
– And I don't know. A 64-yarder?
Steve, I'm going to give Andrew Siciliano credit on this because he looked it up from NFL Network.
2 for 42?
In the 103-year history of the NFL, kickers are 2 for 42 on field goal attempts of 64 yards or more. 2 for 42! I don't care if McManus said he can kick it through the uprights from the locker room.
Yeah.
I'm going with the numbers. And you ain't Justin Tucker last time I checked.
This.
And we're not kicking in Denver. We're kicking in Seattle.
And it's that 2 for 42 versus one play, 5 yards against a Seahawks team without their safety, whom I can't think of his name, he came out with the knee issue. The guy that was with the Jets. What was his name?
Oh, Jamal Adams.
Jamal Adams.
Yeah.
You got Russ Wilson for a 5-yard play.
Even if the play doesn't work, that guy might be able to just run it
and
get it.
Exactly. And they got 3 timeouts.
It's just, oh my gosh. The AFC West is probably going to be very nip and tuck this year. You needed that game.
Yeah, you kind of needed that game.
I know it's only one of 17, but I got a bad feeling they're going to be looking back at that one and they're going to say they needed it. They're going to say they needed it because they are not in a friendly division, as we know, and that's one that got away. It's unfortunate for them. A lot of back and forth on Steelers defensive end T.J. Watt's pec injury. They're not going to have him undergo surgery because if they did, he would be out for the whole year. So they're going to try to manage it. They're going to say he could return in 6 weeks. Either way, it's probably going to take him out of playing against the Bills in week 5, which is good news for the Bills because he was a problem last year in the opener. And then you have the whole Dak Prescott injury thing, Steve.
Suddenly
it went from 6 to 8 weeks to 7 to 5. And now Jerry Jones is on the radio today talking like, we could have him back in 4 weeks. I was like,
here's the thing.
The thumb is pretty important.
It is. It's really important. The problem is, depending on the break and how the screws and how the surgery went, if that thing will mend up pretty quick, it'll be like 3 weeks. And that thing will be in. It'll be strong. It won't be sturdy enough to, you know, take shots like it did the other night and broke.
Yeah, I mean.
I think he'll feel pretty normal in about 3 weeks to a month. And that's basically all you need. If he's going to have to protect it for another 3 or 4 weeks after that, but I think you could play with it.
I just don't know how after surgery you can build the strength up in 3 weeks so it's strong enough to grip and rip a football.
Well, that's just it. I mean, I don't know how in 3 weeks, I don't know how much he'll lose. But, yeah, that's going to be it. I don't know.
Can I just say I particularly enjoyed the team physician for the Cowboys wearing the cowboy hat.
Yeah, well, he's done that. He's been on the sidelines there. If you've seen it, he's been on there for I think probably 103 years.
That's just marvelous.
That guy.
Yeah, my thumb's messed up. Go see Tex.
Yeah, he comes walking. That guy.
Tell me his name's Tex.
Listen, that guy has been that hat. Maybe the other doctor did that. I really believe I've seen that guy in that hat for at least 3 decades. I think he might have been there when we were playing him in the Super Bowl.
All right. Why do you need to wear that on the sideline in a dome stadium? Somebody's got to help me with that. Well, he's completing the look, I guess,
do
right?
What you want. Yeah, you got to be the guy.
I'm the doc for the Cowboys.
So his grandkids can find him on the sidelines.
Oh,
but Let me just say this. Before Dak got hurt, the Cowboys looked horrid. Mm. Anyway, and without him, they're wishing they had a different. They're wishing they had a different backup quarterback.
It's Cooper Rush time. The 49ers said they're open to a trade if somebody wants them, but something tells me the price just went up for Garoppolo.
Well, yeah, all of a sudden they're not Niners aren't desperate. Are the Cowboys? You think?
They're claiming they're not, but that sounds like the used car salesman and Jerry Jones more than anything else. Around the NFL, once again, presented by Kaleida Health, the official healthcare system of the Buffalo Bills. Steve and I take a break here, but a good show lined up for you today. Second hour of the show, we'll have the Hall of Famer, Thurman Thomas, here in studio with us. Talk to him about the upcoming home opener, which I am confident he will be in attendance for. And a bunch of other stuff about week one, his initial thoughts of how the team looks this season. So we'll catch up with Thurm then, but we take a break now. What's on tap for you is which AFC team looks the most capable of giving the Bills a run for their money and why? After 1 week, we know we might be overreacting a little. Give us the AFC team that looks the most capable of giving the Bills a run for their money in the conference. We'll do that with you when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, back on One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, where we are asking you, coming out of week one, which AFC team looks the most capable of giving the Bills a run for their money and why? You can let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, or on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live. Let's go to the phones, and waiting for us there is Mark in West Seneca. What do you got for us, Mark, here on One Bills Live?
Hey, Chris. Hey, Steve. How are you today?
Good.
Good.
Hey, I was just calling in to make a point that I rarely, if ever, hear about. You guys were talking about Lamar and Baltimore a little bit at the beginning of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it amazes me. I mean, when I look at the Baltimore Ravens, they have been a class organization for quite a long time.
Yep.
They recognize talent. They run their organization well. They've been on the verge of a Super Bowl contender every single season. And they have a Super Bowl-winning head coach who, in my estimation, is a top-five coach in the league. That all being said, everybody always complains Baltimore does not put weapons around Lamar for him to throw the ball to, and they don't set him up in a scheme that allows him to be a great passer. So you're going to tell me that this organization, who sees this guy every day in practice, is then going to determine that he's a great thrower of the football. We just need to give him some help, and they're going to ignore that and continue to run a scheme with Greg Roman that everybody knows is running and continue to ignore this year after year after year, believing and recognizing that this guy is a great thrower of the football. There's no denying Lamar's talent, okay? Now, if Lamar's talent throwing the football was anywhere near what it is running the football, unquestionably, he'd be signed and he'd have one of the top contracts in the league for quarterbacks. And I just don't understand how that gets ignored. There's got to be some belief in that organization that we're not sure he can do it with his arm. And until he proves it in the regular season or even in a playoff game, which he didn't do in Buffalo, we're not going to pay him that kind of money. And I think that's part of the reason why he hasn't been signed. And I also think that's why they haven't changed the scheme or gone to a younger coordinator with, you know, who's going to come in with a modern-day passing attack and a modern-day scheme. So I'm curious as to what you guys think about that. But that in the back of my mind when I look at that team tells me what they think of Lamar and how they've done things. I thank you guys and crush Tennessee.
All right. Thanks for the call, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
You want to chew on that?
Well, there's a lot in there, but yeah, no question that Baltimore completely revamped their roster and their offensive approach when they switched over from Joe Flacco to Lamar Jackson, and they went all in. In fact, their head coach said, "Listen, what we really need is wide receivers who can block in the run game," because they knew they were going to be a running football team. So they did that, and then. And now, too, let's face it, in free agency, if you want to go to a team and as a wide receiver, Baltimore is the 32nd team on your list because they're the team that runs it. Even Tennessee, you'd even go to before you'd do this. But I just think, and there's a lot in what you said. The Ravens have done this before. They did it with Joe Flacco. They're going to say, listen, you're great. We'll give you a real good offer, but you're going to have to prove it on the field if you want to get paid. Yeah. And the Ravens have always been willing to pay for guys who prove it time and again. And
just
they'll
paid Mark Andrews a giant contract extension last year, the tight end.
Joe Flacco was the highest paid quarterback in the National Football League. Joe Flacco. That was because he was in a contract year. They went to and won the Super Bowl.
And he was the MVP.
If Lamar Jackson does that, you can bet they will sign him to a commensurate contract. He will be the largest, highest-paid quarterback in the league.
And guaranteed money has been the stumbling block there. Apparently, the Ravens offered him up a $250 million contract, but not fully guaranteed, and that was why Lamar reportedly said no. The veracity of that, hard to know, but I think that was a bit of an issue there as well. We have to take a break here because when we come back, we're going to talk with ESPN NFL analyst Dan Orlovsky. He'll be joining us here next on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, and pleased to be joined now by the man who's going to be in the three-man booth Monday night for ESPN, along with Steve Levy and Louis Riddick. It is ESPN NFL analyst Dan Orlovsky joining us on the line. Dan, good to have you. You pumped for Monday night?
Oh, geez. Well, good to be with you guys. Pumped would be a massive understatement, you know. Obviously, when I got the news of the role, it was a very incredible, right, type of moment. And then when we got the assignment, because there's the doubleheader in Minnesota, Philly, and my wife's from Philly, and it was like, that would be a cool game. And then the other game, obviously, Tennessee at Buffalo, and I love the Buffalo fans and Bills Mafia, and I'm a massive fan of their team. And I'm like, dude, give me Bills Tennessee, because that game is outrageous. So, yeah, it's going to be an amazing, amazing experience for me, certainly. I'm hoping and certainly getting ready to do it justice.
Yeah, and you know this too, Dan. The atmosphere is going to be absolutely off the hook because you know, the Bills fans are going to be going crazy with the expectations, plus having handed the defending world champions a 21-point loss. It's just going to spell out all kinds of excitement in the air. What are your thoughts? And I know you've probably begun to work on this game already. What are your thoughts about the Titans, how they've changed from a year ago when they were the number one seed, and the Bills a year ago when you know, they had the season they did?
Tennessee right now doesn't look very different. You know, obviously one game. The difference is they're not identity or schematically any different. They still believe that they want to line up in their big bodies and run the football with Derek and utilize their play-action pass. The difference is utilizing the play-action pass with A.J. Brown in comparison to Robert Woods or Treylon Burks. Robert comes over from the trade from the Rams. Treylon is their first-round pick out of Arkansas. I'm hoping and assuming that the NFL world's got a glimpse of A.J. Brown is a phenomenal wide receiver. And Robert's really good, but he's not A.J. And Treylon Burks, very talented, but he's not A.J. And it looked like watching that game, Tennessee was in search of who could go win on the perimeter. You know, even the way they were running their formations and trying to cut splits, it looked like they were trying to figure out who's the winner. And there wasn't a lot of chunks open in their pass game. Defensively, the thing that was the really big takeaway for me is their pass rush is just not the same without Harold Landry.
Yeah.
It just isn't. And there, that showed up later on in that football game. And then also, I don't want to say shocked, but the fact that the Giants' offensive line out-physicaled them. I mean, Saquon Barkley had an incredible game. He had 138 yards before getting touched. Before. I mean, that is the offensive line of New York just moving Tennessee. That does not happen often in Nashville.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, I remember looking at the numbers after that game because I did not get a chance to watch it. And just to see that Daniel Jones threw the ball 21 times. I mean, look, you look at Saquon as a talent. You understand why they went to him as many times as they did. But he's also got to be productive and successful running the football. But they obviously were. And it just makes me feel, Dan, like there are just little chinks in the armor of what the Titans have been over the years. And the Harold Landry loss, I think, is a big one. I mean, I know they still have Dupree, and Simmons is still a monster up front. But that one, I think, is going to be costly. I think it's going to take them weeks to find out how to replace him in the lineup. And then taking it a step further, as you pointed out, while the receivers, you know, maybe have some potential, I don't think they're going to have it all ironed out in time for Monday night. So I don't know if they're going to be able to hang with Buffalo unless Derrick Henry absolutely goes off. And with the revamped defensive front that the Bills have now with Jordan Phillips, Daquan Jones, and Tim Settle up there, I feel a whole lot better about them being gap sound against this run-first offense of Tennessee.
Absolutely. The downside is Tennessee comes in with desperation and urgency. You go 0-2 in this conference, night-night. You know, it is going to be a brutal hill to climb back up. So they come in, you know, everything on the table, unload the bag to try to get back to 1-1. You know, the really underrated thing, too, is how well Von Miller plays the run. We often, okay, elite edge rusher, all that. You know, and the Rams candidly did not challenge them in the run game well. The Rams, especially in interior offensive line, got whooped. And it'll be a different beast with Tennessee, obviously, because that's who they are. And the Rams are not trying to even pretend to be that. What I really liked about Buffalo's defense against the Rams, and which will help certainly against Tennessee, is the way that they were doing things opposite Von Miller. You know, they were putting Von in positions and understanding, listen, as an offense, we have to pay attention to Von Miller. I cannot, unless I have a top three or four offensive tackle in the league, I cannot one-on-one block him in many situations, let alone third and eight. So they were doing really good games, stunts, two-man stuff away from Vaughn that was helping some of those non-superstar players, so to speak, be really, really good in the run and the pass game. And that, I think, been a greater sense of not only do they have the players that are necessary? That's when you lock in positions to be successful, so to speak.
And you look at the Tennessee Titans as they walk in here to Buffalo. They've got Ryan Tannehill, who, you know, he's never on the list of elite quarterbacks. He's never one of those guys that people walk into a game saying, wow, I'm really afraid. But that guy, they win with him. And I was watching the film of their game this last week against the Giants. He still has a strong NFL arm. Even though the offense has changed or evolved a little bit on the edges around him. Tell me a little bit about Ryan Tannehill, what you like or dislike about him as a QB.
Yeah, like, and this is his greatest strength, is he can fit the ball and he's unafraid to into tight windows. His ability to see windows and when they open and when they close, and his courage and conviction to fit the ball into tight windows without being reckless with the ball is his greatest attribute. And that's really, ever since he's become the starter down in Tennessee, is really throwing that ball with conviction into those windows. He operates the play-action game really well. He marries the ball fake and the concept of the routes with his feet very good. He's not going to hold the ball long when it comes to a play-action game. He does a good job, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, and it's very much, you can see he's gotten thousands and thousands of reps of it. Wildly creative with his feet. Not designed run, obviously, because they're more reliant on Derek. Very bright. You're not going to confuse him with coverage. And it's hard to get Tennessee because they're so simplified on offense. He's a good player, and if you give him second-level crossing windows, you know, horizontal windows, he can absolutely rip you apart in the play-action game.
Let's talk quickly, Dan, about Buffalo's third-down prowess against the Rams last week. I know we talked to you in the offseason about Ken Dorsey, but the execution was just as good.
Yeah.
9 out of 10, I mean, that's just off the charts. I don't have to tell you that. The thing that I found most interesting was three of their biggest plays in terms of yardage gained came on third down. It was the 26-yarder on the third and one to Davis for the touchdown, the 47-yarder to Davis on the deep post, and the 53-yarder to Diggs that Diggs told us after the game, Josh drew up in the dirt. It wasn't even the called play. He saw Aaron Donald was not on the field and said, just go run. I'll have time to throw.
No, he didn't. That's a real story?
Yeah.
That's what he said.
Oh, my God. That is like elite offensive mind smart. Gosh, that just made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. That's amazing. So, you know, I think the thing that really stood out for me with those third downs was they felt in control. You know, and Josh, I kind of tweeted this out. He did such a remarkable job of hitting his back leg, and either ball came out or he threw it, I'm going to run. My favorite play of the game, or one of them, is the long ball to Davis, the 47-yard post.
Yeah.
Because Singletary makes that play. I mean, Singletary comes over, seeks protection, puts his face on a blitzer. The ball's able to get out, and if he doesn't, Josh isn't able to make that throw. So, but they were never really not in control of those third downs because they were so good on first and second down. I will be honest with you, my biggest takeaway, because I expected them offensively to play good pass game, my biggest takeaway was the implementation of a Kyle Shanahan type of run game. That the numbers that they were getting in their run game advantage-wise in the utilization of formations and motion, that's not been their past, and that was my greatest takeaway offensively. Because if they can sprinkle some of that in, that offense, ooh, buddy.
Yeah, there was a fair amount of 21 personnel, for sure, with Reggie Gilliam.
Yeah, and they were using him as a fullback, but then aligning him as a tight end in multiple moments. It was, and then, you know, getting the motion to come over, so they took a three-man side and made it a four-man side, and they were only blocking three people, four offensive guys. Like, it was really good.
Yeah. Dan, thanks so much for coming and spending some time with us. Really appreciate it, and look forward to seeing you here this weekend for Monday Night Football.
Thanks, fellas. Always a good time. Be well.
All right. Dan Orlovsky, NFL analyst for ESPN, who's going to be on the call Monday night with Lewis Riddick and Steve Levy on ESPN's Monday Night Football telecast. Good to have him on, as always. Always fun to talk X's and O's with him. The hair on his neck stood up.
Yeah, he hadn't heard the story.
I mean, we're just going by what Diggs said.
Yeah, he hadn't heard the story.
Diggs has no reason to lie.
Right. Diggs said it unprompted. He said, you know, Josh just told me, do this, go run, because I'm going to have time to throw this. And it's true. I mean, Josh has come so far. One of the things about him when he came out was how intelligent he was, and that has proven to be the case. The guy recalls stuff, like even during game, and that's – that kind of stuff leads to plays like you saw.
Mm-hmm. Break time for us here. When we come back, we'll have a Hall of Famer sitting next to us. One Thurman Thomas will be joining us in studio. We'll be talking to him about the upcoming Monday Nighter, which I have no doubt he'll be in attendance for, along with what he thought from the Bills' performance in Week 1. Thurman Thomas coming your way next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
on Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, hour number two here on a Tuesday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, and Bills Hall of Famer Thurman Thomas joining us here on a Tuesday. Good to have you, Thurm. How
what
you doing?
What is up, man? How you guys doing? I can tell you what. Everybody's still talking about Thursday. I know
yeah, we're a little bit,
into
right?
It, but I'm going to tell you, I ain't never seen so much Bill stuff in my life.
Yeah. I was telling him, I went to lunch the other day. Every single person had a Bill's gear on. Everything.
I was in Syracuse yesterday. Bill's gear all over the place. I mean, it is.
And that's usually the dividing line.
Yes.
Between Bill's territory mm-hmm. and Giants territory,
right? Yeah.
It's usually the line of demarcation goes right down the middle of that city sometimes. Yeah. But it wouldn't shock me if it's flipped a little bit in favor of the Bills, for sure. Why don't we start there? Thursday night football.
Right.
What I want to know, what were the thoughts like as the game was about to begin, and then after it got started, did your thoughts about what you were seeing change at all? Like, did anything exceed your expectations going in? Because the hype was real for this team, as you know.
Yeah, the hype was very real
yeah.
for this football team. And
now they had to live up to it.
And they had to live up to it. But I think once Vaughn did his thing, it was over. I think it was over. I know, yeah, a couple of turnovers there in the first half, 10-10 at halftime. Yeah. But I still think at that point, game was over. I just think that we looked like the better football team. Obviously, we were. And 31-10 probably should have been 45-10.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Well, at least, you don't have all those turnovers.
At least 41. You know, but you think of 31, you get a field goal out of one of those, and they were down close, and you know they turned it over twice, down three times. Certainly, it was. I was talking to one of the coaches today and said it was almost perfect because it gave them, the turnovers were kind of individual mistakes.
Right, right. Yeah.
So you got enough there to be happy about and think, mm-hmm. okay, we're on the right track. But then you got enough as a coach to say, listen, you clean that up. You know, we got stuff we got to work on.
Yeah, stuff you got to work on. And I actually talked to James Cook. What? Hey, don't worry about the next game. We're about the next practice. We're about the next practice, you know, to settle those things and get it corrected. I mean, and then somebody, you know, people come up with all these thoughts or whatever. And, like, they list off, like, 10 running backs who fumble on their first carry in the National Football League, right?
Yeah.
Right? And it's a pretty impressive list. You know, it was Christian McCaffrey, Steven Jackson. I mean, it was a couple of guys that are on there that, you know, they got some yardage on them. But
Adrian Tomlinson was on that
list.
Yep,
he was on that list. So,
Marshall Faulk was on the list. Oh, my gosh.
Very impressive by what they done. You look at this defense, it was ranked, what, one last year? I mean, you don't see them slowing down at all.
Might be better.
It might be better. And I tell you what, you know, if last couple of years this team has stayed very healthy, and if that front eight or nine or whatever they want to put up there can stay healthy, it's going to be a lot of pressure for a lot of teams, whether they're playing at home or whether they're playing on the road.
We'll have to see Ed Oliver and what his injury brings this week, because he left with the ankle injury, did not return to the game. We'll probably get an update at some point tomorrow from Coach McDermott as to whether he's day-to-day or whether it could be something longer than that. That all being said, you look at the game this week and what they're going to need from their defensive front changes dramatically.
Yeah.
You know, getting 22 hits or sacks on 41 dropbacks by Matthew Stafford last week was fantastic. It probably exceeded expectations.
Yeah.
But what they're going to need from those guys up front this week changes completely with Derrick Henry coming, right?
That's the next test.
You're not.
The next test.
Yeah, 41 dropbacks does not happen against Tennessee.
It could.
Oh, you think so?
It could.
All right.
If they stop that run at the beginning of the game. I totally believe that. I think Vrabel, if he sees the game, gets out of hand, and if our offense can score, 21, 24 points the first half, then you're obviously going to throw the ball. But I'm telling you, though,
I think this
football team is – this defense is set for pass rush and run defense.
Yeah. And I think – Tim Settle and Daquan.
And I think the guy who makes the difference, and I missed the past couple of years, has been Jordan Phillips.
Love
Jordan Phillips. You know what I'm saying?
Good.
I mean, he's been great.
He's
and for
juice.
Him to go to Arizona for a couple of years, come back here to Buffalo – in the first game, boom.
Yeah.
He started off where he left off. And this is incredible.
He has said that he likes playing here because he feels he can be the best version of himself as a player
right.
when he's here in Buffalo. Down there, he had to go. I mean, they gave him a bag.
Yeah.
He had to go. But they play a 3-4 down there when he was down there.
Right.
And he doesn't feel he fits the 3-4 system very well. And he had to just stand in there and grind instead of being a penetrating player.
Yeah.
I mean, they had him lining up at end for a few snaps last week. And he got home.
He got home,
I mean, he is a 340-pound beast that's got more athleticism than I think anybody anticipates on the other side of the offensive line.
You see that this highlight we saw just before the play that we're watching here in studio, I brought this up yesterday. Vaughn comes off the right side of the offensive line for one. He comes off, you know, over the right tackle in a four-man down front once later in the game. And the right guard slides out to help the right tackle.
Right.
All three of the other defensive linemen end up on top of Stafford in the pocket. It's a pile of humanity. So Vaughn gets doubled, and all three of the other guys are on top of the stack.
Right.
It's exactly what you envision. This one right here. It's exactly what you envision.
Good God.
I mean, Stafford, it's like a joke. It's like a joke, you know.
Stafford looked like a cow patty on the – you know, out in the field after that.
It was unbelievable. Vaughn comes out, and they all get home. They all get home.
Yeah,
DaQuan Jones, Jordan Phillips, and I can't remember who the other guy was on the outside, maybe Epineza or somebody. Yeah. But, man, oh, man, that's exactly the way you envision when you got an elite pass rusher when you move him around.
Yeah, and you look at this defense. I mean, what year is this for Leslie Frazier and Sean McDermott?
Five.
And it seems like every single year they've gotten better at the defensive. Presence.
And they develop guys too, though. Yeah. You know, like, I mean, Taron Johnson came here as a fourth round pick. He's one of the top five nickels in the league.
Yeah.
I mean, look what they've done with Benford and Elam alone in the last month and a half.
I totally agree with you.
Levi Wallace is a great example of that.
Yeah.
There's a ton of guys you can point to that have been, you know, Matt Milano.
Right.
You know, seeing him early on, saying, you know, that guy can play. And he plugged in really quick in his rookie season and has been there ever since. It's been fun to watch. And let's talk, too, about this. The secondary has been kind of the linchpin of the defense for, you know, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. I think ever since Poyer and High got here, right?
And for good reason. Terdavious was one of their first draft pick, right? So he comes in. So they got those three guys, and they're rolling with coverage. Hard for the quarterback to find openings, right?
Right.
Well, yeah. Now they got a little bit more up front as well.
Oh, man.
Now they're playing a little bit hamstrung without Tredavious, but the two young kids, both of them had pass defense.
I'm telling them guys are they look like they've been in this defense for a couple of years. Yeah. Even from training camp to preseason into the first game. I mean, Leslie Frazier and Sean McDermott have done a great job of really coaching these guys. And obviously having Poirier back there and Micah High, you know, two of the probably best two safeties in the league, in my opinion, in the last couple of years, having those guys back there to cover a lot of ground. And in the zone and the man-to-man that they mix up, man, in throughout the entire game has definitely helped them. But that pass rush, man, they're going to be able to do a lot of different things back there. I mean – with that pad rush, you might be able to see a little bit more man-to-man now.
Right.
You know.
Well, you're dropping seven. I mean, they didn't blitz once.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So you can
drop seven every time.
And that quarterback is like, okay, well, where do I go now? Right. Obviously, you've seen in the first game. What, Robinson had one catch?
Yeah.
They were talking about him being the deciding factor. With Cooper Kupp.
He was scared. When coming into that game, you thought, man, I don't know what we're going to do with him. Because you got to have some guys on Cooper Kupp. What are we going to do with Allen Robinson? Because that guy can – and he got two targets for 12 yards, one catch and 12 yards.
The thing that I really liked about this football team, and I text Jordan Poirier and Micah Hyde after the football game, and I said, oh, congratulations on the win. Micah Hyde, within 10 seconds, just repeated – he just said, it's just one. It's just one.
Yeah.
Boy, you know what? That right there, I told somebody the other day, and it might have been on the group chat we had, this locker room might be the coolest place to be in the United States right now.
Right.
That locker room is so great and so confident right now.
And that was going to be the next thing that I asked you, because I know you interact with these guys every once in a while.
Yeah.
And you text with some of them. It seems the growth and the maturation of this team is evident on the field. We know the culture that Coach McDermott's been able to establish here.
Right.
You mentioned, you know, how Micah responded after getting congratulated on the win. That's like a universal thing across the board. And I feel like, and you guys can speak to this, having had, you know, playoff runs that didn't end the way you wanted to, 88, 89, not getting to the big game. I got to feel like those playoff losses just build up this kind of scar tissue where you get to the point where you're just like, screw it all. We are on a mission.
Right.
And I feel like that is what this team is embodying right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There is going to be no down game days, no games where they're not just laying it all out there.
Yeah.
Because I think they learned from last year, Jacksonville game,
mm-hmm.
a couple of the others that they should have won.
Right.
It cost them home field throughout the playoffs. I don't know. It's just a gut feeling that I have. They just feel a little bit more laser focused on the ultimate prize and know that that focus has to be there every single week. Do you feel that or sense that from them?
I feel it. I sense it. I believe it. I believe that's what they're looking at. Their confidence is sky high that they can do just about anything on that football field. I really do believe that. And not only do they believe it, I'm talking around with these fans. They're confident now in – we know from the back in the 90s, we know we're going to win.
Mm-hmm.
The fans feel that way right now.
Right.
The fans feel that way. And I know the players do too, because look.
Players always feel that way.
They always feel like it. They feel like they win every single game. But when you bring on a Von Miller here who says, I want to win a championship for Buffalo. After winning one with Denver and winning one last year with the Rams, he brings that type of leadership in there. Man, that thing is – you're going on all cylinders right there. It changes that entire freaking locker room.
Now, there are guys in there, like, you don't have to do that for Joshua, but there are guys down the road, like guys like I used to be, guys covering, like Tywan Jones. There are guys Matakevich and the guys, you know, the offensive linemen down there, you know, the guys backing up the offensive line, all the down through the roster. There are guys who look at that and see that and go, and they just raise their level, you know? So,
well, he was talking about it last week when he said when Cornelius came here. In 87, that's before you got here, but he said Cornelius came. He said, we saw it in the first practice, like, oh, damn. We're going to be really
good.
Where'd
this go from?
He can go.
Right.
So you get that thing where you get – and it's like when we were good, you know, and it was after we'd kind of proven ourselves, but it was the same thing.
Right.
You and Jim and Bruce and Andre and certainly Cornelius and Daryl – the best guys are the hardest working ones, right? So guys like, I'm like, what am I going to do, take a day off? You know, I'm over here like, I'm taking scout team reps. Am I going to
step it up here?
Yeah, I'm going to go half speed, right? So
it doesn't matter that it's week 15.
Well, you've got a guy like Von Miller, that's what he does.
Right.
He comes in and he's going, and you can see he's engaged in every rep.
Yeah.
And he's talking to guys, and he's not talking about, you know, the dinner he had last night and the whatever. It's about, listen, when the guy takes a step like this, you put your hand here and it's all the time.
Yeah.
And it raises the level of the entire roster. That's what great players do.
Look at what AJ, Boogie, and Rousseau did in that game on Thursday night. Rousseau has a sack and a couple of quarterback hits and was a monster crashing down against
crashing
the run
down.
Game.
Yeah.
And then Boogie has a sack. He has a pick that he tips to himself. Yep. AJ's got 1.5 sacks and 4 quarterback hits. Like
that, I would go, and
that's not just Vaughn.
No.
But Vaughn plays a part in that.
I'll say this.
Absolutely.
You go back, and it didn't happen while Vaughn wasn't here, that all of those guys had all that stuff going on in one game.
That's what I'm saying.
They might have done it here, and they might have done
it
there.
It's like an avalanche.
One of them here, one of them there, all of them did it in the same game, and with no extra pressure coming. No linebackers blitzing, no secondary guys blitzing. It was just the four of them, whoever it was, and they got that done in one game. When you have a guy come in who's got some credibility in the league, like Vaughn, and you get guys like Jordan Phillips, who all of a sudden was in Miami, didn't go well in Miami, came to Buffalo, still a young player.
Mm-hmm.
Then he goes out.
Gets his money,
and also sees how it is.
Yeah.
In other places.
Yeah.
And comes back here and says, wait, bro, let's go. This is, It really makes a difference for the attitude of the locker room. And because I tell people all the time, I've said it on the show a bunch, you win games Monday through Saturday, and the game just, it's like punching your ticket.
Yeah, but Coach McDermott, and I don't know if Marv did this, but I just feel like Coach purposely makes practice harder than the damn game. So when they get to the game, game's easy. Like,
yeah.
And we could talk about this a little bit, too, because I'd be curious to get –
harder one way. You're saying harder mentally, maybe.
Well, he's throwing adversity at him all the time.
He's always getting
the coordinators, the players. He doesn't care. Like, he's going to make it as hard as possible for you during the practice week. So when you're sitting there 3rd and 12, you're like, all right, we got this. Like, we're just going
to
run this.
Guys,
I mean, that's what it was like in the game Thursday.
Guys have to concentrate.
And I hate to bring it up, but, I mean, that's what Belichick does. He puts them in certain situations where you'd be like, oh, we got to think right away.
Yeah, yeah.
We got to think right away. And Sean McDermott is doing – I mean, he's – hey, look, after what happened last year with the 13 seconds,
he's got it turned up even more.
He's got it turned up even more now. Yeah. So, yeah, because, I mean, I guarantee you, man, this is going to be a year where there's not going to be a lot of screw-ups out there. I can tell you that right now.
I've got to say, that might have been the thing I was most impressed with in the whole game, front to back, was the execution.
Mm-hmm.
Very few – penalties. Now, granted, they had the Cheffers crew, and they don't throw a lot of flags to begin with. But very few penalties, very few unforced errors. There weren't a lot of instances where they didn't make plays because the execution was poor. Sometimes, you know, the Rams just get the best of you, or, you know, your opponent gets the best of you, you don't make the play. Yes, there were a couple bad decisions with the turnovers, but on the whole, it seemed pretty tight, like for week one, too. You know what I mean? Which brings me to my next thing, Thurm, that I wanted to bounce off of you. Steve and I were talking about this. The Packers, the Cardinals, the 49ers, and there was one other team that I can't remember now, did not play any of their guys. The Rams did not play any of their guys in the preseason.
Right.
Just about every single one of them laid an egg.
Ooh, yeah.
And did not perform. Now, I'm not saying play your starters front to back in the preseason, but you gotta play them a little bit. These guys all look flat.
You know, week one. Man, this conversation has been talked about a lot, especially in the last couple of days. Because do Bruce call you a lot?
No,
he calls me at least. I'm gonna show you my phone.
He might, but I don't pick up.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Teasing. He doesn't call me.
Well,
That's your mistake, Thurm. You keep picking up.
He called me a couple of days yesterday and was like, have you seen all the injuries across the board?
Soft tissue
in
stuff.
In the National Football League. Mm-hmm. And he goes back to always saying, that's why we practice all the time in pads. We did hit a lot.
We had two-a-days for
Bruce
a couple
didn't get
weeks,
a whole lot of training camp practices in pads, if I remember right there.
Yeah, but
the
you know what? When you're going against Will Wolford, you're going to get a lot of work in.
You'll be ready.
And they were going to be ready.
And they weren't – we didn't have any restrictions on contact at practice.
Right.
True.
Back-to-back days.
We were hitting
twice a day.
We were in pads twice a day for like a week and a half or 2 weeks leading into the first preseason game.
Right.
And it was two-a-days for 7 solid straight days before you get a day off. And you're hitting one practice at least a day. They're like going 9 on 7. They don't even do 9 on 7 these days. 9 on 7 was like just take the corners and receivers off the field and go.
Yeah. But to your point, though, there is something to be said about that.
Yeah.
The players got to play, man. Your body has to get ready for that contact for 60 minutes.
Yeah.
And I just think like some of those teams that are not playing, and you named them all right there.
Yeah, Russell Wilson didn't play in the preseason.
They're going to struggle.
He was a little rusty.
They're going to struggle, man. You got to be out there and be on a timing with your receivers and all that stuff. You just have to do it. You just can't just go to it.
Here's the thing.
And Steve was talking about the injuries happen because even if you're practicing in training camp or, you know, here, you know, at the facility with your teammates and all that stuff, and you don't play in a preseason game to take that next step up in intensity, you go from practice to a game where it's 110 miles an hour every play, and something's going to go. And that, you know, that's why we saw, you know, Chris Godwin, who probably came back from ACL surgery too early, he yanks a hamstring because he's, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
it's always a balance.
It's a balance,
you know. You can practice as hard as you possibly want, and you can hit every day and practice one as long as nobody gets hurt.
Right, as long as nobody gets hurt.
Somebody's gonna get hurt.
Yeah,
you know, who's it gonna be? That's really the rule.
And you know what? You think about really from the Bills' time for the last 3 or 4 years. The training,
yeah.
Strength and conditioning coach, they have been outstanding for these guys. Yeah, I mean, if you really look at it, Tre'Davious White been really the only significant injury that they've suffered. I mean, he suffered an ACL, right?
Non-contact, too.
But these guys, man, they've been able to stay healthy.
Butker got an Achilles, but it was week 16, week 17. I mean, we made it through the whole season. You never know, you know, what's going on with that. But it's, I think, too, it's not so much about the physicality. It is about the physicality of practicing hard and hitting and playing in the preseason against somebody else.
Getting somebody
who's
else.
Not interested in your health. Like your teammates kind of, you know,
yeah.
There's none of that going on. But it's also just about getting your mind around, now I got to have my guard up when the ball is snapped.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
right.
I got to watch it. You know, you got to have your antenna up. You know, you got to feel and see everything that's going on around you.
Yeah.
In training camp and practice, you're thinking, okay, I've got this assignment. I'm going to go over here. If he does this, I do that. If I do this, he does that. And, you know, and you're thinking about installing this stuff. But in a game, you don't think about that stuff. You're going, I got to make this play. Let's go. And you got to have, like, an awareness.
Yeah.
And I think that's as big a part. It's the mindset you have when it's live and it's for real that is just different than it is in practice or scrimmage or controlled scrimmage or anything like that.
Thurman, we wanted to, just to shift gears a little bit, get your thoughts on the latest happenings with the Browns organization. Steve was going to congratulate me.
Very much so.
Because they've decided, shockingly through a fan vote, that their logo at midfield going forward in Cleveland will be none other than Brownie the Elf. And I know, feel free to criticize the fact that Brownie has not got the proper 5 points of pressure on the football there as he's carrying it.
That is the worst.
Got a loaf of bread going there.
Not even a loaf of bread.
So the center field logo is a fumble in so many different ways.
He's holding that thing like it's a Bible.
Are we supposed to be intimidated by this? I mean,
he's got his angry
face. I'm
going
to sit up here and say that the Cleveland Browns will be the last team in a National Football League to win a Super Bowl.
Put it on the whiteboard.
I'm going to put that on the whiteboard. It's going to be a while before all of them.
Fans voted for this.
They only.
I mean, I realize he has been incorporated into a lot of their marks over the last, I want to say, 6 to 8 years. He has shown up more and more. But, I mean,
really? Where? This is the first time I've ever seen him.
In some of their marks and logos and things. Like, when I would get the weekly release when the Bills were playing the Browns, I'd see him up in the top corner. I'm like, what's going on?
It was all for the center of the field. This is the one they chose right here.
Right.
The one that we saw. Then this one was the other one where he's standing there with his hand on his hip looking at you like he's, you know.
Yeah.
Then
looks
it's
like
the two,
Peter
then it's
Pan.
The two helmets.
Just this put the helmet out there.
This 3D helmet or the silhouette helmet.
Yeah.
And that was their four choices, and they chose this guy with the angry face and the stiff arm, like the Heisman Trophy kind of pose.
And there is the actual mascot running around the thing.
They're
all
gonna have
pumped up.
The Browns are going to have a mascot?
Well, he's been there for the last few years.
Has he?
Yes, he has.
So it was a slow release, huh?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, slow burn, if you will.
Wow.
I don't know what to say.
It's
hard
really
to be intimidated by that going
Brownie,
in.
Brownie the Elf
they
is
got,
what it
yeah,
is,
I mean,
right?
They got
Brownie
a guy that makes
elf.
Cookies at the
Brownie,
center of the field now. It's like, you know, it's like the
the Elf.
Like the guy that makes the
just
cookies.
Put, Nick Chubb out there.
Somebody, listen.
Jim Brown. Jim Brown out there, yeah. Right?
We
put
are.
Jim
guys
Brown.
Got
nobody,
the same last name for God's
nobody's
sake.
Nobody thought of that.
No.
Oh,
listen.
My.
They, now Jim may be charged too much for his.
And of course, the internet, which remains undefeated.
So I'm going to look at this.
Oh,
all,
yeah,
all
about
after
it.
I leave
they
here.
Said, well, how's come they got Kyler Murray as their middle field logo? You know? That,
oh my God.
It's like all this stuff.
Wow.
And it's like, Keebler Elf is their
unbelievable.
The Keebler Browns.
Yeah. Does that mean everybody gets free front stripe cookies after the game, or like what do we?
Only when they win, I guess.
Mm.
Or did they get the brownie after a loss to make them feel better?
Yeah. or as Steve said earlier, just when you thought the Browns were ready to get it right and move on. They redeem themselves.
They redeem themselves.
Disappoint you all over again.
All over again.
Oh,
wow.
My God.
That is just I can't think of something. I'm trying to think. I'm trying to rack my brain.
You can't.
For a logo that I thought less of.
You can't.
And I'm sure there are some that made you kind of look at them a little.
Why an elf? Why would it be an? I know there's a history to
this.
And
probably.
I got to. I'm going to read about it after the show because I'm not really that interested.
Wow.
An elf.
That's not why good.
How did they get to the elf?
Okay.
I got to, you know.
Apparently it's been around for a while.
Right. It's been around for a bit. And I guess Cleveland fans would know this. And our buddy out in the control room, Tom Hollander, grew up out in
Cleveland.
In Cleveland. Yeah. He'll know.
The Cleveland area, yeah.
And my buddy that I text, he hasn't texted me back yet.
He's probably still shaking his head.
He's like, what?
Or he's devolved into a deep depression.
He's like, Thurm, that's a fake tweet.
It's bad enough that the Deshaun Watson thing went sideways. Like, that wasn't to be foreseen.
That's amazing.
Yeah. We'll try to get the 411 on why, you know, it came to this.
Brown of the Elf, it says now, it's been around since 1946.
It's unfortunate. I think we'll just say that.
For us, I mean.
While you dive into that, we will take a break. Thurm, if you want to hang around, you're welcome to. Otherwise, you have fulfilled your duties. I think we would like to know if you're going to be at the game, right? Monday night?
Yeah, I'll be there. Come on now.
Now this has become a thing.
Right.
Because I know you have upwards of a dozen Bills jerseys. Current players is what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Have you made the decision
yet? Yeah.
Which
it's
number?
Been
oh, you're. Okay. Well, don't let
made.
It out of the bag. We want the big reveal on Monday.
No, I'm not going to tell anybody.
He puts that out.
Is that
out
how
on,
it goes? Yeah.
Yeah. He tweets it out or Instagrams it out. And,
yeah.
So, all right.
And
you already got
the
your
big
pick.
Thing is, it's a jersey I never worn.
Ooh.
Really? Yeah.
Okay.
So that kind of narrows it down a little
bit
there.
Well,
it does.
It could.
But still. But yeah.
All right.
Never worn this jersey before.
That was a great tease, Thurm. Nice job.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm trying
good
to come
have
up
you
with
here,
something.
As always.
I'm coming up with some obscure guy. I mean, one of our old teammates or something. Who's it going to be?
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I mean, he might give you a hint. Is it a current or a former player?
It's current.
Okay, it's current. All right.
Is so it there's current?
That's tried all you got. Usually
always.
It is.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Usually
yeah,
it is.
I would never wear your jersey.
I know that.
I'm just saying that. I mean, that's something that I treasure a lot.
Yeah, right. It's fine. I get it.
It's in the closet with 12 and 78. And you never see me wear gyms
it's
or Andres. I don't wear any of that. Yeah, yeah.
Last thing for you,
sir.
Yeah, last thing for you.
It's in the closet on the floor.
Last thing for you, because we are anticipating that the roof's going to, if there was a roof on this thing, it would have been blown off come Monday night.
Yes.
What do you think makes this home opener particularly special? Why is it going to be nutso on Monday?
Well, one, because we're favored to win the Super Bowl. And it looks like we have the best team in the National Football League.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for Bills fans to really show their presence, because they did it a great job of that on the last couple of years on the road,
mm-hmm.
and now for a Monday night game.
At home, yeah.
At home. The home opener. I don't know when the last time they had a home opener that was a Monday night game.
And think about this, too. It's the first time the fans in person get to show a little love for these guys that have gotten them to this point.
Absolutely.
This is a new group. It's a new group.
It'd be very interesting to see, is Sean McDermott is probably going to introduce the offense?
Maybe. Maybe
maybe he does.
Maybe Vaughn comes out the last, I don't know.
It's going to be a loud roar for Vaughn or Josh.
Right.
One of the two.
So now, and think about that. You got superstar on both sides of the deal. That's pretty good.
That's pretty cool right there.
Thurm, thanks for stopping by.
All right.
I'm sure we'll catch up with you.
Great seeing you, man.
In the coming weeks. Especially to get your thoughts on how this Monday night went. I'm confident it'll go well.
I'm confident.
Bills are already 10-point favorites.
10 points.
That's favorite. A fat number.
That is a fat number.
Vegas
knows something. Yeah, I'm going to love to look at the face of Mike Vrabel. You know, he gets a little.
He gets under your skin.
I don't like him at all. I don't like him at all.
All right. Well, there it is. Thurman with the big hammer right at the end there. Let's go.
He's a hard coach to beat.
Yeah.
That's why you don't like him.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got his guy. He doesn't miss a beat. You talk about guys, and he got a little pushback from some of the decisions he made in week one, but on the whole, that guy. Yeah. And I've said it before. I say it all the time. Game management, timeouts, when to not take a timeout, how to use the clock. He's the best. He's the best guy.
He's good.
Yeah. All right, break time for us. Thurman, thanks. We'll catch up with you soon, and we'll see you here on Monday night. That's Thurman Thomas, the Bills Hall of Famer, joining us here on One Bills Live. Plenty more coming your way next. We'll see you in a few. All right, we've officially jumped the shark with Brownie the Elf, the new logo that will be sitting at midfield at Cleveland Brown Stadium. What is that? First Energy Stadium, I think?
Something
like
that.
That's the name of their park. Yeah. Steve was congratulating me before the show for becoming the new center field logo because the name of the thing is Brownie the Elf. And now our fans have taken that and run with it. So thanks for that, Steve. Appreciate that so very much, as my face has now been emblazoned on multiple gifts on Brownie the Elf. I'll just say this. I'm probably the same height. I've never worn pointy shoes or leotards.
You don't have pointy ears either.
But
you have an angry face, though, I've seen.
I do have an angry face at times, yes. Brownie the Elf probably has more hair than me. There's a tuft of it coming out of the underside of his hat. But, yes, we've completely jumped the shark, as you can see here, Steve. Our MSG viewers are getting a load of me as Brownie the Elf, unfortunately.
That's funny.
Yeah, it is what it is. I'm sure we can get a guy to Photoshop it a little bit better than that, right? I mean,
yeah, we have people. We'll work on it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if we need to work on it. I think I've seen enough of that. I'd like to know, since they used my name, do I get name, image, and likeness royalties from this at all?
My guess is probably not.
Okay.
Might
have to get my attorney on that one.
Is absolutely.
See if we can get something from that.
Yeah.
Since several of you call me by that name, not the elf part, the first part. Although, my height is probably going to put me in the category of elf soon.
Brownie the Elf. Yeah.
Yeah. So there it is. Last week, Josh was called an actual buffalo by Mina Kimes, and now
great line by
here
Mina
we are.
Kimes.
Here we are in week two, and I'm
your Brownie.
I'm Brownie the Elf. So
Brownie the Elf.
So there we go. I was trying to read up on the thing. I got into this long, deep wormhole of Brownie the Elf explanations. It's like, can we get a simpler one? Like, it just
1946. Yeah. It came out, and whatever.
It was just this whole deep explanation into the origination of elves and stuff, and exactly. Brownies are something separate. There might not even be brownies that are true elves. It's just, I don't know, it's really weird.
There was
talking about homeowners leaving out bowls of cream for these brownies so they don't act up and cause mischief in your house.
Right,
there
was actually a Disney movie back in the day where they had little people like, foot tall. It was all done with effects and stuff, and they were called brownies. They weren't called elves. They were called brownies.
Right.
Now that I think about it.
Yes. Great.
And I can't remember the name of the movie. I can't remember. And it wasn't that long ago, but they were called, brownies.
Fantastic, then.
Yes.
They could have done better. Why they just didn't do a dog to represent the dog pound, I don't even think that was an option that they gave
the fans
to vote on.
They did not. They gave them two options of helmets. Like they had the silhouette helmet. There was just the orange helmet with side view of the helmet. Then they had the one where it was three quarters turned like a 3D image of a helmet in the center of the field where you could see inside the helmet. It was black and dark, And then they had a different pose of Brownie the Elf, which was, kind of a mountaintop pose where he's got his hand on his hip kind of thing. This one is the action Brownie. Elf, Brownie the Elf, where he's like stiff arming and holding the football in the worst possible ways to make sure he fumbles.
Yeah. He's carrying that football like a loaf of bread.
Not even. You wish you could carry a loaf of bread like that. At least he's got it tucked under, but he's got it like the back half of the ball. It's about to spill out. It's like he's on the verge of fumbling the thing now. And still in slow, not even in slow motion, still live.
And I'm just going to say it. Who's actually getting traction in that kind of footwear?
Yeah, he's wearing socks. basically.
Like, you're going to wipe, especially with the weather they have in Cleveland. You're not getting anywhere in those.
No, yeah. It's horrible. And his hair is orange. By the way, did you notice
rags.
That his hair is orange?
Yeah. And that, I mean, I guess it's because they wanted to, they want to make a discernment between where his hair starts and where his sock hat begins, because he's got a brown hat.
Oh, he's got a hat on.
He's got like a sock hat. You know what I mean? Like those.
Wow.
Yeah. It's.
Well, there you go.
It's special.
And I had, you know, I didn't know that was coming. I usually you kind of get a heads up, like, hey, the Browns are thinking about, yep. And they had a fan vote and stuff. I mean, you got to live in Cleveland to find that stuff out, right? Because we had no idea about it. This is the first shot across the bow we've gotten about anything the Browns are doing.
Let's go to Dennis in Lewis. He has a comment to offer on this weird Browns logo. What do you got for us, Dennis?
How's it going, guys?
Good.
It's been a while since I've talked to you guys, man, since I've called in. But, all right, first and foremost, I think that is goofy as heck.
Yeah.
I thought they were the dog pound.
Yeah, use a dog head, right?
Yeah, it's something along the lines of that, yes. But with that being said, okay, move that along. Let's go back to our guys.
Yeah.
I was so proud of how we performed on Thursday. I mean, I expected us to win, but not like that. I mean, Josh turned it on in the second half, and the defense just showed up. I really think we really have a chance this year, man. I think we got a shot on Monday night because, I mean, it's our first home game. I may have a chance to go to it, so I'm hoping to get out of work a couple hours early I can get there. But I'm really excited about this year, man, and I just – I don't know. I just wanted to call and comment on it. And I love you guys. I always listen to you every day at work.
Yeah.
And what's your thoughts on the rest of the season, guys?
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks, call, Dennis. We're just about out of time in this segment, so we'll take a break here, but we'll answer that question when we come back here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Buffalo Bills and AdPro Sports are teaming up to award varsity head football coaches with the Coach of the Week Award. Sweet Home Coach Jeremy Zimmer has been named the Week 2 Buffalo Region Coach of the Week after he led the Panthers to a 49-15 win over the North Tonawanda this past weekend. In Section 5, Rochester Region, it's Bolivar Richburg Coach Steve Smith as his Wolverines defeated Wellsville 42-24, his team now 2-0 on the season. This is the first year the program is participating in 8-man football. In Section 5, each Coach of the Week winner will receive a $1,000 grant from the Buffalo Bills and AdPro Sports. Quickly, let's answer Dennis's question, Steve. He thinks they've got a shot this week against the Titans. So do the Vegas oddmakers. They're giving the Bills, they're labeling them a 10-point favorite in this game.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it'll be closer than I thought. This would be a much better game. This will be a much better game this week because the Tennessee is a really good football team, and they took a loss last weekend, which will highly motivate them to stay in it. They have a hard team to match up against. They're very physical. I watched them play on film against the Giants this last week. And while the Giants did some good things on them, it took them a half to get it together. Tannehill can still sling it. I think the question is, will they score enough points to keep up with the Bills? And I would say, yeah, because they've got the ability to limit the number of possessions. So the Bills will have a hard time scoring a lot of points because they won't get that many chances.
Yeah. I think the Bills could make this an ugly game if they're executing the way they did against the Rams.
Yeah. Oh,
I just think the Titans
have
stepped back to the rest of the pack in the AFC just a little bit, and the Bills have stepped up and declared themselves an elite team. I think it's going to be around that number. I think they win by 10.
Right.
Steve and I back with more tomorrow. We'll see you at 1.